In fact, Srila Prabhupada proclaimed that those four sannyasis, because they're impersonalists, they're speaking an impersonal philosophy, he said, this is a disease that will destroy our whole society. They should not be allowed in any temple. They should reject this impersonalism, accept my teaching, study his books, and he said they should travel and preach but not come to any temples or disturb any devotees. You know, when these devotees got this message, they repented. And it's actually a wonderful thing, because in their repentance they traveled all over America and opened wonderful centers. And when Srila Prabhupada saw that they were preaching the right thing, and he accepted them back within their society. That was on Janmashtami of 1970. In 1971, in this small temple room, Sri Sri Radha Vrindavan Chandra were installed. In fact, right where you're sitting now. Srila Prabhupada personally found those deities in India and personally sent them to New Vrindavan and gave them the name Radha Vrindavan Chandra. As far as I know, they were the first large marble deities that Prabhupada ever had installed in the Western world after London. First marble deities in America. So Radha Vrindavan Chandra were installed. Kaladri Prabhu was explaining they only had one outfit. They would just take long pieces of cloth and wrap it around the deities every day. And it was a very simple community. In 1972, that is when I first came to New Vrindavan. I had come from India. And when I arrived, because I was looking like a sadhu from India, the devotees here could not appreciate. In 1971, the deities were installed, and shortly after that, a land on the main road, which was later called Bahulaban, was purchased, and Radha Vrindavan Chandra were sent down to there. So the majority of the community shifted to Bahulaban, and only a few people remained up here. Hayagriva Prabhu and his family, Samba and Shamadasi, they lived in an A-frame right on the top of the hill behind here. And there was Adipati and Prachi Devi and Kunti Devi and her little baby daughter Karnamrita, whose name was then Sky. Kunti's name was Willow. So what happened is I came to New Vrindavan and I was so eager to see Radha Vrindavan Chandra. But the devotees felt that I should just immediately go up the hill because they didn't want any guests to see a person like me. So I remember I was sitting down for prasad. And in India, you never ask for prasad. A sadhu is supposed to just accept what's offered. So there was a line of about 15 devotees, maybe 15, 20 devotees at New Vrindavan then. And they were all sitting, and everyone was served prasad, and I was in the middle of the line, and they kept passing by. So there was nothing. Then finally, everyone got up and left, and I was still sitting there. So one of the servers came and said, "Would you like some more?" I said, "I didn't get any yet." And he said, "Well, there's nothing left." Then somebody else came and said, "The leader wants you to go up to the other farm immediately. He doesn't want you here. You should load a hay wagon and go up." So there was one pitchfork which somebody else had. I had to lift with my hands, and we went on a horse wagon and came here. I was very happy to get here. It was such a beautiful place. And the leader of the community came up a couple days later and gave me a service. He said, "I want you to pull the weeds out of the strawberry patch that was right on the side of this house over here." And I said to him that that's violence. To pull weeds means to kill weeds, and weeds have spirit souls. I said, "I cannot kill weeds." So he said to me that in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna told Arjuna to kill his relatives. He told Arjuna you should lament neither for the living nor the dead. So you must kill these weeds. So I was trying to be obedient. So I went down and started. I would put my mouth right next to the roots of the weeds, and I would chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, then pull the weed, thinking that they should hear Krishna's name at the time of death. Then 3 days later, he came up and handed me a double-barrel shotgun. And said, "There's groundhogs in the corn field. I want you to kill those groundhogs." And I knew if I argued with him, he would start preaching from Bhagavad Gita. So he showed me how to shoot the shotgun. I never shot a gun in my whole life. And I went to the cornfield, and he said, "If there's one piece of corn eaten, you're responsible." So every time I saw groundhogs coming, I would run and chase them away so I didn't have to kill them. And somehow or other, weeks went by, and I was there for hours and hours a day, and no corn got eaten, and I didn't kill any groundhogs. Evil. I was not surrendered. Then they asked me to start milking cows. There were two cows, Kalia and Dudya. Very nice cows. One was black and white, and one was brown and white. And that was a very wonderful service, taking care of the cows. And then Srila Prabhupada was planning to come, and devotees from all over the world were going to come to see him. He said, "I'm coming for Janmashtami and for his own Vyas Puja." And he was going to give a series of lectures called Bhagavad Dharma Discourses. So this was widely publicized amongst ISKCON devotees that Prabhupada was coming back. So there was a great surge of energy to prepare things for Srila Prabhupada. Tomorrow we'll go to the very holy site where he spoke. And devotees just chopped down trees to make a big pavilion so that it would shade everyone. 1,000 devotees shade them from the sun. And there was a house at Madhuban, and somehow or other they asked me to go to climb down the mountain, across the little creek, and then up another mountain through forests. There were no paths to get to Madhuban. And when I was there, Kirtanananda Maharaj asked, "Does anyone know how to paint?" And nobody answered. He said, "Does anyone have any experience in painting?" And I told him, when I was about 13 years old, I once helped my father paint the walls in his living room. So he said, "You're in charge of painting." So they gave me a little knife, and I had to scrape all the paint that was chipping off the entire house and then paint it inside and outside. Hare Krishna. That was my... I would live here and go down and then come back. Then Srila Prabhupada came. That was one of the most treasured memories of our lives. We will discuss that tomorrow. After Srila Prabhupada's visit, I was living here. And it was a very peaceful life. There was one other brahmachari that came up. His name was Sridhar Prabhu. And we were the only two brahmacharis. And then there was just two grihastha couples and one lady and her little daughter. And we were both living in the pig pen. It used to be a place where the previous farm here used to keep pigs. At that time, it just had a dirt floor. And it's just a little log cabin, very simple. And we used to chant 64 rounds every day. And then we'd come here for Mangal Arati. At that time, the deities were a plaster statue of Kartamashan, a little deity of Krishna with a flute in his dhoti, and that was on the side of the altar, and in the center was a painting of the Panchatattva. No, I'm sorry, Sadbuja, the six-armed form of Lord Chaitanya. That was the worship here. And it was very, very nice. We just worshiped the deities and milked the cows and chanted and discussed Krishna, did a little farming. There was one bull. His name was Brisham. Stubbornest oxen in history. He would do nothing for no one. So it was always because Vahulaban was a place where the productivity of developing New Vrindavan was taking place. So the slowest cows they would send up here, the most disobedient cows, and the laziest oxen. So that was a wonderful experience, associating with Brisham. He was so stubborn. My service was, after milking the cows, to go into the forest and with a little axe to chop down dead trees that had no leaves, and then to chop it in small pieces, and Brisham would pull it in, and that would be used for all the cooking. I'd have to cut it in small pieces once it was here. And anything I tied to Brisham, he would just go to sleep. Just lay down. So other devotees tried beating him, but I was not of that nature, and I knew it wouldn't work. So I just started preaching to him. And ultimately, Brisham felt sorry for me. And he got up and started pulling the wood. One day, Sridhar Prabhu and myself were upstairs, and we were looking out the window, and we saw a horse wagon. And on the wagon, there was a mountain of sleeping bags and different, like, backpacks and suitcases. And we were wondering, what is this coming up to our little peaceful abode? And behind it, we saw 20 Brahmatrinis. When they arrived, they proclaimed that Kirtanananda Maharaj had ordered them to come up here and make this the Brahmatrini ashram. So, Sridhar Prabhu and myself were in the pig pen. Finished our 64 rounds. We came to the temple for Mangal Arati, and we came right up to where the deities were here, the photo, and we looked around, and the whole temple was full of Matajis. Brahmacharinis. And all Brahmacharinis like to get married. And we happen to be the only single men there. So Sridhar Prabhu felt very uncomfortable. So as soon as the morning program was finished, he said, "I'm getting out of here, I'm leaving." I said, "Well, I am too, but nobody else knows how to milk the cows. I have to take care of the cows." So I sent a message down with him, "Please arrange for someone to milk the cows so I can get out of here." And I got the reply back, "It is your order. You must stay up there and take care of the cows." Hare Krishna. So I would milk the cows. I would come and stand right in front for the Mangal Aarti and just look at the deities. And all the Matajis were giving classes. And there was two Grihastha men that were there too. And they were leading all the kirtans. And I was just trying to perform my service. My only brahmachari association was Brisham. I would be in the forest all day long. And I would just discuss Harikatha with him as we were chopping down the trees. So once a week, I had to go down with Brisham to pick up grains to bring up here for the cows. And every time I'd come, the brahmachari ashram was down there. The brahmacharis would make fun of me. They'd say, "What are you doing up there with all those women?" I said, "I don't want to be there. I have to be here. I'm begging to come down." And I would beg, "Please let me come down." The leader would say, no, "Until you train up one of the Matajis to milk the cows, you can't come down." And I just didn't know how to train Matajis to milk cows. So I just went on with my service and begged, "Please let me come." And the brahmacharis were saying, "You're up there because of your desire." So it's not an easy life. One time I came down with Brisham to pick up the grains, and leader of the community said, "Why are you up there with all those ladies?" I said, "Because you're making me. I've been begging to come down." He said, "You get down here immediately." So I very happily. And I moved to Bahulaban, where the brahmachari ashram was. In 1973, in June, there was a wonderful festival at New Vrindavan where devotees from all over America came. And at that time, Sri Sri Radha Vrindavanath were installed here in the Vrindavan farm. Srila Prabhupada personally gave them that name, Sri Sri Radha Vrindavanath. The Brahmacharinis lived here. Brahmacharis lived at Bahulaban, worshipping Radha Vrindavan Chandra. And during that festival, also Radha Madhava were installed at Madhuban. We'll discuss some of the wonderful, wonderful experiences that we all had at Bahulaban tomorrow. In January of 1974, the brahmacharis were ordered to move back up here. And the brahmacharinis were moved to Madhuban. So we came up. Param Brahma Prabhu was our temple president. And I was in charge of the cows. And one devotee was in charge of the deity worship. But within a few days, the head pujari blooped. He left. So Param Brahma Prabhu asked me, "Will you be the pujari?" So I said, "Whatever you say." So I became head pujari and in charge of the cows. It was very, very wonderful life here at that time. The brahmacharis, they would be the workforce of New Vrindavan. I'll tell you the schedule of the brahmachari ashram. Everyone had to finish all their rounds before Mangal Aarti. That was the law. So the devotees would get up by 2 o'clock in the morning. And they would take bath, and they'd come into the temple and chant their rounds. Then there would be Mangalarti, which was really ecstatic. Every day the Mangalartis were so sweet and so enthusiastic, so full of devotion. It was such a very, very deeply united community of brahmacharis. After Mangalarti, there would be Tulsi worship. After Tulsi worship, at that time there wasn't even Guru Puja yet. Prabhupada had not established it. That was a little later. After Tulsi worship, there was Srimad Bhagavatam class, which lasted maximum half hour. Right after Bhagavatam class, the devotees ran upstairs, took prasad, and then immediately after prasad, by 6:30 in the morning, they had to leave to walk down the road to go to their workplace. At that time, Srila Prabhupada's palace was being built. So most of the brahmacharis, by 6:30 in the morning, they would be climbing down that mountain, crossing rivers, and climbing back up another mountain through the forest. And others climbed down this muddy road, Agasura. And the only people allowed to stay up here was the pujari, the cook, and sometimes a woodcutter. It was in the beginning of 74 that Kirtanananda Maharaj was going to New York to visit Srila Prabhupada. So he took a group of devotees with him, of which I was one. And we heard Srila Prabhupada speak there. And we went on morning walks with Srila Prabhupada in the parks of New York City. When we came back, it was said that Srila Prabhupada told Kirtanananda Swami that a first-class pujari never leaves the deity for the rest of his life. Hari Hari. So he came up here with me, and just a few yards from this complex, he took his cane and drew a line in the mud and said, "For the rest of your life, you never cross this line. It is Prabhupada's desire. You live here, and you die here in the service of the deities. That is first class." So we accepted that order as our life and soul. Let me tell you something about the winter in Radha Vrindavanath's temple. In those days, the winters were severely cold, excruciatingly cold. One devotee would wake up early to start a fire. But because I had to finish all my rounds before waking the deities, I had to wake up by 1:15 to 1:30. So I would always be up before the fire was started in the bathhouse downstairs. And sometimes they started a fire here in the temple room. But usually the wood was so wet that it was 90% smoke and 10% heat. And because the house, now it's renovated, at that time it was such an old, beat-up farmhouse that they would put thick plastic and nail it outside the windows so the wind wouldn't come in. Then the smoke would just fill the room and burn people's eyes. This is during Japa period. Just burn people's eyes. And people were choking, but they couldn't open the windows because there were plastic on them. So devotees would run outside into the snow and the blizzards just to breathe. So generally, we just didn't even start fires. We just tolerated the cold. And it was an amazing experience because no one fell asleep during japa. No one sat down because the floor was like sitting on ice. So devotees would just walk and try to keep their feet off the floor for as long a duration of time as possible. At that time, there was one light bulb hanging from the center. And just with the illusion of some warmth, the devotees would gather around the light bulb and chant their japa. And when the ghiwik would come by, when the ghee lamp would come by, devotees would hold their hands as long as possible to get the prasad of the Lord. Downstairs in the bathhouse, when they would start a fire, they would really try to make it hot, because that was the only chance of heat for the whole day. So devotees would just be, the bath was very cold. The first person in the morning had to break ice. There was these red pickle barrels, big barrels. And there was just a hose coming from outside. And you just turn it on and the pickle barrel would fill up with water. It was ice cold water. Sitting all night, there would be a sheet of ice over it. We'd have to break the ice. And then we'd take bath. And those baths were really purifying. I remember there was one very, very famous devotee, quite famous as a staunch brahmachari, that came from another center. And he came here, and after one bath, he said, "I'm getting out of here." And the next thing we knew, he got married and he was in charge of a big woman sankirtan party in California. And the most amazing thing was to see Tejomaya Prabhu taking his bath. He was here a few minutes ago. Tejomaya Prabhu, please stand up. Please stand up. Tejomaya Prabhu ki jai. He was one of those original brahmacharis. He would pray to Krishna with such helpless devotion. Because the water was so excruciatingly cold. We had these little sawed up, just the top of a 1 gallon milk carton was sawed, and we used that in the pickle barrel to scoop out the water. And he would take that water in the scoop, and he would just say, "Krishna, Krishna, Krishna, Krishna." What else would you say? He would just start talking to Krishna.
He would say, "Okay, Krishna."
Yeah, he'd say, "Okay, Krishna." Say, "I'm going to do it, Krishna. I'm going to do it for you, Krishna." "Okay, Krishna, it's for you. I'm going to do it for you, Krishna. I'm going to do it." And he would just go into a frenzy. And at the peak of his heartfelt prayers, he would just pour the water on it. He'd go, "Krishna, Krishna." Never. Everyone was like that. Some people hid their emotions a little more than Tejomaya Prabhu. Very cool. And when there was a fire down there, the devotees would just huddle around that fire. And it was a regular thing to see devotees with gigantic burn marks on their body, because they would just try to get as close to the stove as they could. Yes, Nityodita Prabhu? Everyone had scars and burn marks from time to time.
Because not only to try to get close to it,
it
was like 30 men in like 10 square feet.
Yes, it was very crowded. And to respond to nature's calls, that was a major part of our life. Because there were no such thing as toilet or sanitary facilities. We had to climb down the mountain because it was an offense to the deity to do it anywhere near the temple. So we had to climb down the mountain quite a sufficient distance, and we had a little shovel, which was a U.S. Army surplus shovel that somebody brought from Vietnam. And we had a little can. It was a government surplus peanut butter can. And that was to bring water down to wash ourselves. Now in the winter, it was so cold. We'd have to walk through deep snow to get down the mountain. And oftentimes it was freezing, blowing winds, blizzards of snow coming on us. And we would just go down in our kopens, our, what we called in those days, Brahmin underwear. So it was very cold. Because if you wear any clothes to pass stool, then it's contaminated. And then you can't wear it anymore. And we didn't have any extra clothes. Should I tell you where we used to get our clothes? There was a barn just next to here. It's not here anymore. And there was a wooden bin in the barn where the previous owners from decades before used to just throw their discarded clothes. And it was just like a pile of old clothes that had mildew and moss, and all the clothes were kind of stuck together. And in the winter, it was all like a big, hard, solid block of clothes, and you just try to peel pieces off. Yes, Tejomai Prabhu, you remember?
If you used to have two same boots, you were lucky.
So when a brahmachari said, you know, I want to requisition some clothes, he would just said, there's the clothes bin, find what you can. And we would just go looking for whatever we could. Nobody had anything that fit. Our dhotis were just some polyester saffron-colored cloth that we'd wrap around. We each had one or two dhotis. Very simple. So somehow or other, one devotee made a great discovery. He went deep down into the clothes bin, and he found in it an old World War II U.S. Navy coat. And we decided that we would all share that coat for the purpose of passing stool in the winter. And it was given the name, the stool jacket. In the early morning, when everyone would wake up early, it was the only time of the day people had a chance to respond to nature, because you had to bathe afterward. That was the Brahminical way. So devotees would stand in line waiting for the stool jacket. It would just hang on the wall. And nobody had to wait long, because it was so cold out there that people just performed their business as fast as possible. You heard Srila Prabhupada's example that this world is like a stool house. Take care of your business and get out. We had sublime realizations of that precept of Srila Prabhupada. We'd run down and then take it off and give it to the next person, run down, take it off and give it to the next person. Everyone would run down with their little shovel and little bucket. It was a very simple life. The prasadam was very simple. We had many different cooks. One of the cooks was Chandramali Swami. He was so fearful that the brahmacharis would fall down. That what we had was this, at the beginning, it was oats, raw oats, with no gear oil, just dry fried in a wok over a fire of wood. Now what you have is about half the oats are black burnt and half the oats are white raw. And there was no sugar and no salt, just burnt oats. And the only thing that had any flavor was there was also dry fried peanuts put in it. But Chandramouli Maharaj, who was then a brahmachari, he was thinking that peanuts have a lot of protein. And if the brahmacharis eat too many peanuts, they'll fall down. So he would specifically and meticulously count every peanut he would eat. So there would be no more than about 4 or 5 peanuts per brahmachari. And the brahmacharis used to get very angry with him. Why don't you put more peanuts in? No, no. That's Maya. Eating more than 5 peanuts is Maya. But the prasad, very simple. After the oats, they had a new discovery. Kirtanananda Maharaj read in a newspaper that in a local prison, the warden of the prison found that the prisoners were behaving better and also doing more work when he gave them a diet of oat water and rice. Oat water means just a few oats boiled in water, so it's very thin, with salt and little ginger, yes, and rice. Because he said, Prabhupada told us that we are inmates in New Vrindavan, so we should live like proper inmates. So that was the food, oat water and rice, in every farm of New Vrindavan. And it was infamous throughout ISKCON. I remember one of my dear godbrothers, he came all the way, he was a sannyasi, he came all the way to New Vrindavan because everywhere, anyone who went to New Vrindavan would complain, do you know what they eat? Oat water and rice. So he was thinking that everyone hates it so much that he wanted to taste it just because he wanted to relish the sweetness of renunciation. But the devotees at New Vrindavan loved it because it's all we got. So prasad was very simple. And as far as the kirtans, especially in the winter, very, very cold, japa was ever increasingly enthusiastic. There was once a video made, about 5 seconds of the devotees chanting japa here. It was actually an 8mm film. And you see all the devotees huddled together, just jumping up and down with their bead bags, shaking their bead bags as hard as they could, and screaming out, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. And such wonderful kirtans. Not only for the pleasure of the Lord, but for survival. Just to keep warm. The more you dance, the warmer you get. Very, very simple life. And the devotees would go down, all the brahmacharis, to work on the palace. I remember, as the pujari, I had a very influential position, in the sense, you know, in the material world, if you have wealth, you have power. Because people want your wealth. Well, the wealth of the community was in the burnt ghee wicks, because it was the only taste of ghee a devotee would get, besides on Sunday. So after the ghee lamp would be offered to the the deities, it would be given to the devotees, and then it would be brought back to the pujari room, and I would have the black burnt giwiks. And we'd advertise to the devotees, if you help with the deities' offerings, or if you help with the deity seva, I'll give you a giwik. They would take that giwik and squeeze it as hard as they could on their dry chapatis and rub it on the chapatis. Very good. Whatever brahmacharis lived here in those days, even though it was so simple and so austere, we all think back and ask, why did we stay? There was no prestige. There was no money. There was no comforts. It was a torturous life physically. But most of the devotees who were there then consider it the most blissful days of their lives. Because there was only one attraction here. There was the deities. The beauty of Radha Vrindavanath, the same deities that are here today. They were the shelter and the life and soul of all the brahmacharis. The brahmacharis would literally run up the mountain from Bahulaban and from Prabhupada's palace to come back to serve Radha Vrindavanath. And in the evenings when they would come back by about 7 at night, everyone was literally just so eager, so anxious for any service to the deities. We had to create services because the demand was so great. There was deities of Balaram, Subhadra, and Jagannath. And Balaram has a little plow. And one devotee would meticulously, through the whole Srimad Bhagavatam class, just decorate that plow every day with new garments. Just wrapping ribbons and little plastic jewels on it. And Krishna had a cane, you know, that cane for holding his arm and curding the cows. Another devotee had that service of just putting his heart, his soul, and life into making that cane as beautiful as possible. Every single day, the cane would get dressed. The plow would get dressed. Each of the deities would have their own pujari. And the disciplic succession photos that were on the altar, a couple devotees had that service. They would make chandan, and they would make beautiful, incredibly devotional effulgences on each and every particular person of the disciplic succession. Incredible effulgences. I mean, they were so decorative, because the devotees just wanted so much to serve the deities. It was all there was. There was no sense gratification here. Women were not allowed. The prasad was simple as anything. In the winters, it was freezing cold. But when the devotees would come forward together and see the beautiful effulgent forms of Radha Vrindavan Chandra, when devotees would stay for greeting the deities, actually devotees, the greeting the deities was 6 o'clock, I think. As soon as the deities were open, then everyone would leave. But during greeting the deities, everyone would just be standing completely absorbed in devotion and affection to the deities. Everyone would just go, wow. And every brahmachari would know exactly what each deity was dressed specifically, what jewels they were wearing, everything about them. Because that's how much deeply they were absorbed in the darshan of the Lord. It was all there was. Shri Shri Radha Vrindavanath Ki
Jai!
And that is the joy of Krishna consciousness. There was great unity because everyone was simply centered around personal direct service to the deities and to Srila Prabhupada. The first president, his name was Param Brahma. Wonderful, wonderful president. He was really a good soul, very exemplary brahmachari. But there was one brahmachrini who wanted to marry him. And she decided to perform tapasya to get him as her husband. So Kirtanananda Maharaj told him that she's performing tapasya to get you. If you perform more tapasya than her, then Krishna will protect you. But if you don't, she will win. Huh? It's not a secret, everyone knows. So he was really just increasing his tapasya like anything. But then one night, because he used to go down to Bhuvalaban, such a wonderful Vaishnava he was. Wonderful Vaishnava. Very talented, very devotional, very brahminical. But he decided to sleep on a little lake on a raft, which was between the Brahmachari ashram and Bhuvalaban. And he was, if he woke up in the morning, if he was on the side of the Brahmachari ashram, he would remain a Brahmachari. And if he was on the side of Bhuvalaban, he would get married. So he bowed down and left his destiny to Krishna. Krishna says that of purifiers, he is the wind. So he woke up in the middle of the night, and he was in the Brahmachari ashram side. But then he went back to sleep. And when he woke up the second time, he was on the side of Bhuvalaban. So he came down and explained his destiny. So in a very, very noble and exemplary way, he was married. Very Krishna conscious couple. Prabhupada said that ideal training for a grihastha is the Brahmachari ashram. So the success of a Brahmachari is either that through Brahmacharya he becomes so renounced he just wants to surrender his whole life in renunciation to Krishna. That's one type of success. And the other type of success is a Brahmachari gets a very, very good training in Krishna consciousness and then marries and becomes a first class grihastha. So he did that. But because he was the leader, yadyaracharati strestas. Leaders do, followers do. Soon I saw practically every senior god, brahmachari here decided to get married. And I was the pujari, and it was only, usually the woodcutters wouldn't last long. So it was usually just pujari and the cook that would stay up here all day. And the cooks kept leaving. They just kept getting married. And it was very difficult being a cook down there. Because you have to cook with wood that is sometimes 90% smoke and 10% heat. And in those days, we had high standards, very high standards. There was between 6 and 15 preparations for every offering. So I never cooked in my life. And here I am, asked to cook all 6 offerings for Radha Vrindavan Nath. So I sent a message that I don't know how to cook. So I begged my godbrother Sudanu to come up to teach me how to cook. So Sudanu Prabhu came up, and he was only allowed to come up for one day. And I watched him cook each offering. And I took notes of how he made each preparation. And then he left. And after that, I had to cook all 6 offerings every day for several months until we could find someone else who was willing to stay up here and cook. That was my training, just one day of watching someone. I wasn't a good cook either. So who were the cooks? There was Krishnamurti, Anadi, Hankar, The famous singer Mangalananda was up here for about a year. He was the best cook. And then there was Krishna Shravana. And last but not least was Chandramali Prabhu. He came. He was the last of the cooks up here. My schedule was to wake up by 1:30 to wake the deities, take care of cows, sometimes the cooking, Sandesh Burfi, making all the offerings, all the arties. Very busy schedule. I was getting 4 hours sleep a night. Then Srila Prabhupada instructed Kirtanananda Swami that there should be 24-hour kirtan at New Vrindavan. He said, during the day, your work is your kirtan, but during the night, there should always be the chanting of the holy names. So he made shifts, 3 shifts every night, and 3 devotees on each shift, 2 devotees on each shift, and each devotee in the community would have 1 shift a week. But everyone was complaining because they had to work so hard the next day that being up at night was disturbing them too much. So he sent a message up to me that he wanted me to do all the shifts for all the days for the whole year. So I told him, well, I'm not allowed to cross the line. He wanted the kirtan at Bahulaban. He said, I drew the line, now I'm erasing the line. You come down every night. After you put the deities to rest, you come down and you make sure you're up there in time to wake them in the morning. And in those days, there was no consideration of when you will sleep. So we would put the deities to rest at night, and there was no such thing as a flashlight or a torch in those days. The road was... When the moon was out, you could see, and it wasn't, it was pitch dark. Pitch dark. In the winter, the road was solid ice, and in the summer, it was deep, sludging mud. Very difficult road. Brahmacharis would come up and down every day. I would go up and down every night. So I would go down, and I would meet a few devotees. Kuladri, Sudanu, Gargarishi would always stay up to meet me. And then as soon as I got there, they went to sleep, and I just sat on the porch outside the temple and chanted all night. Until 2:30 in the morning, when devotees came up to get chant japa, then at 2:30, I would start walking up the road. And Mangal Arti was at 4 o'clock, so we had to wake the deities at 3:30. We just run up the road and take bath and then wake the deities. In those days, I don't know what it's like now, but one of the favorite sports of West Virginia was coon hunting. Hunting for raccoons. And raccoons come out at night. So these people would have dogs to chase the raccoons and guns, and they'd have flashlights on their hats, big bright flashlights. So I remember one time I was walking down the road at 9:30 at night, it was pitch dark, and the raccoon hunters saw me, and they sent their dogs to get me. I guess they felt a Hare Krishna was something of the same species as a raccoon. So these dogs surrounded me, barking, barking ferociously, giant dogs. And about 5 of these men came with their flashlights and their head in my face, pointing their guns at me, and said that you're the nicest raccoon we found all night. They told me they were going to shoot me and kill me. And after harassing me for about a half hour, they said, they let me go. They said, but one of these days they're going to get me. So that's what New Vrindavan was like in those days. And when I was doing the all-night kirtan at Bahulaban, it was very common that People would come by and shoot guns at us. In fact, one night, I was singing from the songbook under a light bulb, and a person came by in the road and shot out the light bulb. And all the glass fell on my head. Pretty well. So then I would come up, and as far as sleeping, I would sleep between offerings and Archie's. Total, I would sleep four different times a day, and total get about an hour and a half sleep. That went on for a couple years, I think. But I'll be honest with you, none of us ever considered leaving. The thought never once crossed my mind to leave New Vrindavan. It was our service to Prabhupada. We made our vows. There was just no question. Did you ever think of leaving?
Only because of your preaching.
And my health was destroyed, but it was such a wonderful opportunity. Because of my severe type of lifestyle, I contracted this disease where I constantly had boils, between 1 and 20 boils at a time on my body. And they were big boils that would turn purple. Do you remember Tejomai? And I was given the name Boils Ananda Maharaj. And even though they were so painful, and there was no medicines, no medications, because there was no doctors here, we weren't allowed to go to doctors. In fact, if you were too sick to do your service, you were sent to Dr. Gargarishi. And he had only one medicine. He had cow antibiotics and a cow needle syringe. So no matter how sick devotees were, they pretended they weren't sick and went on with their service. So we went on with our service. It was the life of New Vrindavan. In 1975, this beautiful altar was made for Radha Vrindavanath. Previous to that, they were where all of you are sitting. That's where the deities were. And they were just on this very simple wooden altar. But we got this marble was donated by an Italian marble maker in Pittsburgh. And two devotees, one devotee named Gosta Bihari, he was a wonderful Vaishnava. He still is. He actually put this wonderful altar together. He even carved some of the designs in the altar. And in the celebration of Pushyabhishek of 1975, for the first time, all the devotees in the whole community were invited to come up to Vrindavan Farm, even the Matajis, for the inauguration of the new altar of the deities. It was a glorious festival. The Sunday feast was also very extraordinary because there was only two people allowed to stay up here on Sundays. Everyone else would go to Bahulaban for the Sunday feast. And we would cook like 30 preparations every Sunday for the deities, just two of us. And it was wonderful because when all the Mahaprasad came off the altar, all those preparations were for the two of us. And every Sunday night, Kirtan Ananda Maharaj would come up and give an istagosti under a willow tree that was at that time just outside the temple room. And all the devotees would gather around and hear Hari Katha.